Blog Talk Radio.
Jean-Luc, Geordi specs, mysteries on the holodecks, asteroids, triple droids, telepathic betazoids, transporter, deadly claw, visitor from L.A. Law, photons, no Kirk, captain has gone berserk, shuttlecraft, Council Troy, Dr. Crusher's little boy, Klingon rights, parasites, new heights, phaser fights, Data's head, Tasha's dead, Riker's hanging by a thread, celebration, transformations, everyone to battle stations.
Next generation on your favorite station. We didn't start the series, but when we are gone, it'll feel beyond. We didn't start the series. It's the next generation on your favorite station. We didn't start the series.
God, I just love that song. It never gets old. Never gets old. Anyways, welcome to Comic Corner, our monthly Star Trek edition presented by Freakopolis Geekery in Whitehall, New York. We have a great show planned for you guys tonight. We're going to talk about what I think is one of the definitive books of the year so far, Discovery Aftermath, book number one. We're also going to delve into Star Trek Year 5, issue number 4 and 5. And with me, as usual, we have TJ, our shopkeeper from Freakopolis Geekery in Whitehall, New York. How are you doing tonight, TJ?
Doing very good. Excited to talk comics, my favorite time of the month. We got three really good books, so I can't wait to get into them.
It's going to be fun. And we also have Sub-Commander Charles with us. How you doing, Charles?
I'm doing good. Enjoying a slight cool down.
Yeah.
Only high 90s.
I think it snowed up in Saranac Lake where Leslie's at. It went down into the 30s the other night, so pretty cold. And we also have with us my first officer, Eric. How you doing, Eric?
I am doing most excellently. We are starting into our fall weather here in Portland. We got a little bit of rain happening today, and it was kind of nice. I'm not going to lie. I like it when the rain starts.
I like the fall weather myself. We can go up to camp. We can sit outside without getting sucked to death by mosquitoes. It's not really, really hot. It's cool sleeping weather at night. I like it. So we have an issue of Star Trek Year 5, issue number 1, that was on our Facebook page that we want to give away to you guys. And I couldn't figure out how we're going to do it. So what I did is I broke it up into likes, loves, and shares. And then over a text, none of Eric and Charles and Ken, nobody knew what they were doing. I just said, Charles, pick a number. Eric, pick a number. Ken, pick a number. Everyone picked a number. And then I counted down the list to that number. That person was the winner. All right? So basically, what we have are three winners, and I'm going to read their names right now. And the first person, the first winner of these three that calls either this show or Trek Talking on Thursday will win a copy of Star Trek Year 5, issue number 1. So the first person that we chose was Mark Ubakoff. The second person that we chose was Anthony N. Francis. And the third person was Keith C. Smith. Now, our phone number here is 646-668-2433. It's the same number on Thursday for Trek Talking. So one of you guys, call that number right now. Or Thursday, but the first one of you three that gets through to us wins that comic book. It's that easy. All you got to do is listen, call, and win. We got a lot of great stuff to give away in the future, so keep that number handy for speed dial. And without further ado, I'm going to turn things over to TJ, and we're going to dive right into the Comic Corner Star Trek edition. Take it away, TJ.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we've got, like I said, three great books this month. We have Star Trek Year 5, number 4, Star Trek Year 5, number 5, and Star Trek Discovery Aftermath, number 1 of 3. I think we're going to save that for last and jump into, if that's cool with you guys, finish up some stuff in Year 5 before we talk about the awesome new stuff going on in Aftermath. Now, this is really interesting because we sort of have the end of the Sigma Iosha sort of storyline in Year 5, number 4, and we get some new stuff, the next bit of story, sort of part one of an episode in number 5. They also have different creative teams All of these books have different writers and artists, so we get a little taste of people's taste on Star Trek, throughout the three different books. So I tried to truncate number four as much as I could. As we said last month, Star Trek Year 5 so far has been a really dense book, lots to parse, lots of, concurrent storylines and things happening, and, which makes it really sort of gives it a literary feel of, it's really trying to do a lot, which I think is really working. But last month I felt so bad trying to explain what was happening, so I tried to truncate it, but we'll see if that works, I suppose, because it's still quite long. Star Trek Year 5, issue number 4, written by Brandon Easton with art by Martin Cocciolo. Sorry, Martin. We open with a recap of the adventures on Sigma Iosha 2 with Spock running for the leading office. Elections are done, I forget what it was exactly, I think every 6 weeks on this planet, after learning about sort of how, the Earth does elections. So, rapid sort of one problem candidates with, not a long term at all. We sort of open where we left off. Spock has announced him running for office, and his platform is that the northern continent is starving the southern people. Basically, the current administration, led by Jamek, is starving the southern people, led by Jojo Krakow, of resources and the ability to progress the species to space flight. And as such, this is going to cause one of their early space stations to come crashing onto Sigma Iosha very soon, within the next couple days or so. Kirk confronts the current president, Jamek, about this, and he basically passes the bill and is like, well, if you're so worried about it, why don't you stop it from falling on our planet? Kind of an odd thing for the president to do, but I guess he didn't believe it was going to happen. We then cut back to the situation on the Enterprise. Scotty is in command. He's confronting a saboteur and his band of evil ensigns in their attempt to kill the Tholian that we captured in the first issue after beaming down to a Tholian colony. With Chekhov's help, the people on the Enterprise subdue the saboteur and take him and his accomplices to the brig. Voting begins on Sigma Iosha, effectively tying the hands of the bureaucracy and President Jamek in the Senate. Kirk and Spock hatch a plan into Sigma Iosha's to break into Sigma Iosha's launch base and attempt to divert the course of the crashing space station. After they were basically brushed off by Jamek again, he's basically saying it's election time. It's after 3 o'clock, so I can't do anything. So sort of taking that bureaucracy that, we know all too well here on Earth, to its, extreme by saying I'm incapable of doing anything now, sorry, it's out of my hands. So, as a backup plan, Kirk, asks Scotty to get power back to the Enterprise, systems, an attempt to also stop the space station. Basically, the ensigns messed up some systems in the warp core, affecting the power, able to divert to different systems. And, Kirk's basically like, hey, man, we're on a ticking time clock here. So if you could do anything to get power back and save this planet, that would be awesome. He agrees to that, although they're definitely under a time crunch. In the brig, we learn that the saboteur has close connections to the Tholians. They had lost a family member, his sister, on the Defiant. And Scotty basically is like, well, doesn't matter. You're going to be facing the judge, pretty much. back on the planet, Kirk, Spock, and Bones attempt to break into the Omega base. That's the Sigma Ocean's launch base. And Jamek's people put up a bit of a resistance. Back on the ship, Uhura continues to attempt to communicate with the Tholian, having a breakthrough when showing the child the Fibonacci sequence. And that was a really cool page. He had this like 9-panel grid, sort of learning throughout, you know, the page itself that this was stuff that Uhura was showing the Tholian. And he finally recognizes the last card that she shows him. You know, she's trying to communicate with him through sort of pictures to see if he recognizes anything, which is, you know, they've been trying to talk to this child for a few issues now, and they finally seems like they're making a breakthrough. Spock, Turk, and Bones begin to make their way through the Omega base, but they're unwilling to launch a rocket, an experimental warp core rocket, to catch or land some people on the space station to stop it from falling into the planet, because it risks like being hit or hitting some Air Force members that are flying above the space the launch base right now. Luckily, Scotty and the crew on the Enterprise managed to get systems back online and tractor beam the space station, stopping it from falling into the planet. After all that business sort of settles down, we learn Spock wins the presidency in a landslide and immediately abdicates his role. He's, you know, it's not, I think it's illegal or it's against Starfleet protocol for a active duty officer to serve in a political office. So he, you know, thanks them, but he abdicates his presidency and gives them some ideas on how to better, you know, increase their democratic process. Basically, he gives them some philosophy to read, including The Republic by Plato, Narrative of the Life of Frederick Douglass, and The Teachings of Surak, and some, you know, maybe like make a council with, you know, people represented from all parts of the planet so that we don't have another space station falling and crashing into your home. And our away team kind of catches up and learns that communications begun with the Tholian child and starts to plan and leave for their next mission. So that's the general plot of this issue. A lot's going on. Really loved the page with Uhura. I thought seeing the books left for the Iotians was really interesting. The Republic, the Life and Teachings of Frederick Douglass, or whatever it is. Oh, and the Teachings of Surak. I thought it was really interesting. He left two human and one, you know, the classical Vulcan teachings. You know, I thought that was kind of cool. But I'm not really sure. You know, the art is always has been really good throughout Year 5 in general. I'm not really sure about the pacing of the issue in general. The plots are cool. I'm kind of invested in all the things happening in here in terms of the stuff on Sigma Osha, you know, really cool metaphors and narratives on like real life bureaucracy. And there was some cool stuff about dealing with guilt as Kirk unable to sort of process that at times. The ongoing stuff with the Tholian child is really cool too, but the constant, like, you know, 2 pages of this story, 2 pages of that made it sort of breakneck, and I was getting whiplash a little bit, I think. So not a bad issue at all. I think this changing the creative teams, I think, took away some of the cool, like, Ulysses stuff that was going on as they were, you know, this is the last year of their mission on the 5-year mission. And we lost some of that somewhere in these past couple issues, which I think is a shame. And the pacing and general cutting back and forth between the away team and the stuff going on the ship was a little distracting for me. But overall, a quite compelling story. I'm liking seeing these threads, you know, woven throughout. This is a cool way to see the original series Enterprise crew as sort of a serial instead of, you know, mission of the week sort of situation. So in general, another good issue. This segment didn't quite wrap up as well as the first 2 issues, in my opinion, but, you know, definitely some cool, compelling stuff in there.
Excellent.
What did you guys think?
And, well, first of all, I think we have to take a caller. We do have a caller on the line, and so callers take precedence because, hey, they're our bread and butter. These are our fans. So let's see who we have on the line. The number looks familiar, but let's see who it is. Good evening. Thank you for calling. Comic Corner, what's your name and where are you calling us from tonight?
This is David calling at home sick.
David, how's that Borg invasion
what's up,
going?
Man?
Resistance is futile.
I had to call in. I didn't want to be assimilated.
No, definitely not. You don't want that to happen. So David actually won a copy of Star Trek Year 5 issue number 1 from us. Congratulations, David.
Woohoo, I have it right here. Right next to me.
Have you read it yet?
No, whenever you guys were talking about it, I was like trying to read it. I'm like, hey, I forgot about the Comic Corner. It's on. So I set it down. I'm like, I wonder what they're going to talk about today.
It's always good. It's always Star Trek, so it's going to be good, right?
Where everything's okay with me.
Excellent.
I just really want to call in and say hello to you guys. And since I'm home and I'm all medicated on allergy medicine, oh, my God.
Well, at least you didn't get bit by a bug on your butt, because that's terrible. Let me tell you from experience.
I did get bit by a spider or something.
Well, we're glad that you called, David.
I just call in and just say hi.
And we hope you're feeling better, so take care of yourself.
All right, I'll let you guys go. Have fun. I'm listening to the rest of you guys.
Hey, thanks for calling in, David. Kapla!
I hope one of these other guys call in.
Hopefully.
We hope so.
They want their free comic book.
Okay,
thanks for calling,
gentlemen.
David. Have a good night.
Bye, guys.
Sure.
See you, man.
So, Eric, what'd you think about this book?
I'm kind of like generally in the same boat as TJ. I think overall, I still am digging the story. Overall enjoying the story, but then kind of, you know, wondering about the pacing of the book. So some of the things that I really did like about it, I like that these issues are tending to open kind of the way that a typical TOS episode opens, which is with a captain's log entry. And I think that's really cool because it automatically gives each one of these books the kind of feel of watching a TOS episode. So that I really like. And then as you kind of head into the book and they sort of get into the story that TJ was just describing, what I really liked about how they entered that was that Spock was manipulating this situation right from the beginning, right? He knew exactly what to say to these people to get elected because he could see right through them and kind of what their motivations were. TJ talked a little bit about that space station that they did have up in space. Did you see how janky that thing looked? I mean, it was like, surprised anybody was alive on that thing. But then, you know, it's interesting because then even though Spock's kind of manipulating the situation, Jamek, the president, kind of tosses it back in Kirk's face a little bit because he shows him some pictures of war. He shows him some pictures of slave ships. He says, you know, basically, do you deny that you've been doing kind of crazy stuff to propel your civilization forward? You know, the one group always building on the back of another group. And Kirk's like, you know, he doesn't really address that. But what he does say is that, you know what? Okay. But if you keep on looking, eventually we got past that, which I think is the classic story of Star Trek. It was nice that they kind of checked back in on that, you know, the fact that we eventually overcame all of that stuff. And that's the precedent for pretty much all the Star Trek that we have these days. You know, there's definitely something weird going on the ship with people, like becoming aggressive for no reason. In this particular one, it's the next one.
Wrong
Sorry.
Issue.
No, The wrong issue. We'll talk about five, but sorry. Never mind. That was one of my comments about number five. let's see. The rest of this issue, yeah, I did love that when they got to the golden ratio sketch, it kind of solidified the fact that Uhura was going to be the one that spends most of the time trying to communicate with this Tholian. And it kind of made me think about Hoshi a little bit from Enterprise, because I've been rewatching some Enterprise episodes and how she was so important at the very beginning of that show in being able to translate, languages here and there. And that kind of became the whole reason that Enterprise was able to do things, was because Hoshi was able to communicate with the right people. They put Uhura in that role as the communications officer, which makes a lot of sense. And it's cool because it also is this child that she's dealing with. So it's almost like a teacher student or, you know, adult child. There's a tenderness to the Uhura Tholian relationship that I think makes the Tholian less scary. And, you know, makes it not the rock monster that everybody's kind of come to fear overall. I like how the Tholian later on in the story, it sort of pulls away when Kirk gets close to it. It's almost like it can sense that Kirk is different from Uhura, that maybe there's a, you know, he's got some different feelings about it than she does. Overall, pretty good book. I agree, you can tell the shift of the team, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I just didn't feel like this book was quite as strong as maybe the first few issues. But I still like all of the stories that are going on, and I like that they're kind of weaving them together in a way that is relatively interesting. And I like that since issue one, we've kind of had this through thread of the Tholians. It's kind of it's a compelling reason for me to keep watching, because I really, now I'm invested in this kid, right? I want to find out what happens with this Tholian child.
And how about you, Charles? What did you think?
Well, as we've heard a lot more recently on the discussions, you've got the A and B story. And that was often how, I'm not sure how much TOS had AB, but I know a lot of TNG on had a lot of AB stories. And I liked that. I was reading this book and feeling like, okay, I'm sitting here watching a TOS episode. It kind of felt to me as though paced as a episode. Yes, we're going, as Eric said, we're kind of moving back and forth. But the Enterprise often would do that, where they'd switch back and forth. And you kind of want to do it maybe in a couple of pages so that you're not jumping scenes in the middle of a page. I think they like the idea of having you jump. You turn the page is a good time if they need to jump scenes. But I like how Spock came in, took a bit of control on this, and gave him direction to his captives. And kind of worked about his way, saying, okay, here's a great idea, let's doing it. Got himself elected based on a premise, and instead of saying, well, instead of making me leader, how about we take a person from each of the factions, put them together, and make it a group that can make planetary decisions, which I think is what they needed overall. One of the scenes that I especially enjoyed was the usual Kirk razzing Bones, and Bones reaching out and grabbing the communicator and saying, well, this is over with for now, which is exactly what I expect kind of between those two. And Spock's idea, let's bring these three books in. Here's some philosophy to read that might send you in the right direction. And I think it'd be curious if IDW could one day go back to this group again and maybe see how they progress from there. So overall, unlike the others, I actually really enjoy this book and like the direction they're taking it.
Excellent. Excellent. And, you know, I was a little bit distracted with this book, and I felt that Captain Kirk's, I don't know what they're at, whining about wanting to give up his command was kind of like not in character for me, hearing Captain Kirk whining about guilt and giving up his command and not being ready to step out of the chair, blah, blah, blah. It was way too early in Kirk's career for that, because we don't hear that until the motion picture when he's an admiral, like, you know, a decade later. So I got a little bit tired of the Kirk whining about not wanting to retire in the middle of a mission. I thought that was very uncharacteristic, and I got tired of that. But overall, it was a decent story. I enjoyed it. The artwork was good. And it was fun to read. Just a little bit Kirk whining a little bit too much. That was about it. So TJ, take us on to issue number 5.
Let's do that. So this issue, a little easier to parse. The pace slows down a little bit, and I think some of that is with due to the new creative team of writer Jody Hauser and artist Sylvia Califano. With the threat from the Tholian Assembly and the chaos in Sigma Osha 2 seemingly behind them, the Enterprise continues toward Earth in the end of their mission. Following their breakthrough communicating with the Tholian passenger, now known as Bright Eyes, cute little name that Uhura sort of gave the child in issue number 4, forgot to mention that, but I quite like that name.
Planet of the Apes, anybody?
Yeah, true.
Yep.
Uhura continues to find a way to try to talk with their young visitor. Meanwhile, Kirk, Spock, Bones, and a team of scientists travel down to the surface of an unexplored planet on Federation business. And, basically they send an away team down to Hesperides 1 to sample and collect some archaeological evidence from about the planet's demise. Apparently, an ancient civilization long dead. We beam down there and get a scene on the planet's surface, learning that some sort of energy weapon seemed to have wiped out the inhabitants of Hesperides 1. They sort of pontificate about the nature of violence, whether it's a symptom or a disease itself. Quickly finish up the away mission, collecting some samples and beaming them onto the Enterprise, noting that they're basically in quarantine until they can be dropped off to some other Starfleet members. They're not going to get a chance to take a look and really do any extensive experimentation on them while they're on the Enterprise themselves, because it's kind of a closed system, as it were. Back on the ship, where the sort of the rest of this whole issue takes place, and I enjoyed that. Not a lot of back and forth like the past couple issues. It's kind of a, not necessarily a bottled episode, but it certainly makes the pacing better. It fixes some of those pacing problems we've been talking about through tonight's Comic Corner. So back on the ship, Kirk checks in on Uhura and Bright Eyes. Unfortunately, they seem to, after their breakthrough, reach another roadblock. She's trying binary. She's trying other mathematical things. Clearly, we know that the Bright Eyes recognizes the Fibonacci sequence, but they haven't made it much further than that, unfortunately. Basically, Kirk can't help but wonder if they're going to get any further at all, but he has faith. He sort of believes that Uhura will crack this case at some point. And as he's leaving the quarters, he notices a teddy bear set beside. And she, Uhura lets Kirk know that, yeah, you know, it's one way to try and, you know, bring some empathy into the conversation. And, you know, like Eric was saying, very wisely, that, like, yeah, this is a very sort of teacher, student, you know, mother, child, mentor, mentee sort of thing. So this just further illustrates that point. But Kirk has a great little jab about a teddy bear is great, but there's a fad on Earth in the 1970s that might be a bit more appropriate for the Tholian, a pet rock, which, yeah, it's, I found that quite funny and is very wise. Then we Kirk leaves Uhura and the Tholian child to it, and we get these ominous shots of the archaeological artifacts and, you know, the sort of close-up and humming and lots of energy. So clearly there's something not quite right with their place on the Enterprise. Then we kind of quickly go through a number of vignettes of like rapid deterioration of communication between crew members and sort of lending themselves to violent ends where people are hearing you know, things from other crew members that they're not saying, and they tend to be sort of aggressive in nature, and it happens with the archaeologist in the mess hall, happens with Uhura and Chekov in the hallway, and it really comes to a head in the engine room with a couple of with basically Scotty having to break up a fight between some crew members. They're literally fist fighting. So with that, you know, clearly something's happening with the archaeological finds. There's some communication breakdown, all sort of paralleling the whole, the stuff that's going on with Tholian as well. I mean, it certainly came to mind for me, like, wow, communication's playing a huge, it's a big theme in this issue, playing a huge role in the problem the crew is having and the problem with our alien friend. So the sort of commanding officers take to the ready room to try and determine the cause of it. Bones, you know, quickly says, hey, you know, I've had some folks come in with cuts and bruises, one broken nose. Nothing's getting too bad, but clearly this seems kind of medical, potentially anyways. Others think it might be something with the communication systems in the ship itself. You know, they're just testing their options now, seeing what possibilities await. Kirk calls in Uhura to help, given that communication is her strong point. And she's more than willing to help. Unfortunately, she'll have to leave the Tholian behind for a time. And she gives him the teddy bear that Kirk had picked up earlier. And he sort of, or it, immediately destroys it. And as she's heading out the door, she's like, you know, no worries, you know, we'll get you another one or we'll find something else that works. The Tholian finally speaks. It's all been leading to this. The Tholian says, sorry, I destroy, after tearing through the teddy bear. And then quickly, with an awesome page turn of the teddy bear torn up in the hands of the Tholian, crouching sort of in its corner next to its cage. The Tholian says, stay here, no alone. So clearly maybe the stuff that is making it hard for the crew members to communicate is actually facilitating communication between Uhura and the Tholian. That's my guess anyways. And we're that breakthrough number two has sort of come around, and that storyline is really beginning to take a forward position in the book on the whole. I think this not necessarily return to form for the series on the whole. This is certainly a lighter, easier to parse, more focused issue. It went by really quickly compared to the first four, but I'm liking the storyline they're setting up in general. You know, a sort of space mystery causing space craziness to happen is always interesting. And with the addition of the Tholian, makes it pretty compelling, I think. It seems, you know, much more focused, not nearly as literary as in the past, but still a fun read. Sylvia Califano's line work is solid. You know, I mean, they really do get some great artists on year five so far. Even if it has a little different of a take, it's a little more stylized maybe. Her lines are a little thicker. Inking's a little heavier. But very clear in its intention, and you know, it's very followable, which is key for sure. Nothing, you know, not too stylized, but definitely a little more cartoony. I'm not sure quite how to measure it, but she does a good job, Sylvia. I would read, you know, if she was on the book the whole time, I would not complain, but the way this series is going, I doubt that's the case. So yeah, another solid issue. I think this was the stronger of the two. Maybe it's because it's a setup issue. We'll probably get the resolution to this and the first arc on the whole in the next issue. But the setups are always good, and I quite liked it.
Well, take it away, Eric. What do you think? Star Trek Year 5, Issue 5.
Yeah, I think I'd generally agree with what TJ was saying. The way that I would describe the style is I would say it's kind of light and bright. It just is, it doesn't feel heavy to me. The colors are really bright. It was the thing that I noticed, you know. At first I thought, well, maybe the line work's really simple and that's what I'm noticing. But then I realized how complex the line work was with just a few strokes. So I began to kind of appreciate it more. And I think it's the coloring. The coloring's kind of simple, and it uses a lot of bright colors. So just interesting, a different take on things. There's some panels that just like really pop with color, bright reds and greens and, you know, that sort of stuff. So I do like that they kind of showcase different teams with this series, because what it allows them to do is it kind of allows them to, I think, try out different combinations of, you know, artists and writers and see what really sings, and then they can in the future plan other books based on that. The story is pretty interesting. You know, it is a mystery, like TJ was saying, so I wouldn't say that too much actually happens in this issue. There's kind of a lot of, you know, just demonstrating the space madness that TJ was talking about. I found myself just kind of enjoying the art the most in those points in the story. There was nothing earth shattering about this story that really compelled me. I mean, I still want to see what happens next, but there was nothing that was really like, wow, that's a really cool, you know, story point, or wow, that was a great twist, or something like that. So, it felt a little bit more to me like just kind of a little bit more of a setup for the second issue and where the story's going. There was none of the great introspection of Kirk kind of looking within himself. I would tend to disagree a little bit with Jim on the last book. I think that, when I actually kind of like it when Kirk goes back and, you know, thinks about his guilt and kind of relates to the Scarlet Letter. It offers a quote from that book, which I think harkens back to what TJ was talking about with, you know, the Ulysses references and stuff earlier in the series. This issue was completely devoid of any of that kind of, you know, interesting Kirk looking within himself type story. So I thought this was an okay issue. I didn't love it. I actually liked the art, I think, more than I liked the story, even though the art was completely different from anything else we've seen from these books. That's my take.
And I'm not changing my story, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And how about you, Charles? What'd you think?
Well, I'm going to kind of tie in with Eric. I think Kirk, you said he kind of showed regrets in motion picture. But they've been out in space they've been out in space over 4 years. I think the crew is getting a little tired. And I think the captain's getting a little tired. I think he just is getting very stressed at what's going on. And he's showing the fact in that one issue that he's feeling that stress. So I actually like the humanistic point of view of him dealing with this change that he's not ready to deal with. because he knows after 5 years, it's possible for him to move on to another ship and not continue with the Enterprise and kind of miss the net. Well, what could I have done better? On to issue 5. One of the things I love in this one is the cover. The view of the destroyed city and the Enterprise in its shadow.
Yeah.
I thought the artwork just like, wow, now that's a interesting view. And then showing showing views of this ancient city and what was left of it.
Charles, do you think this story that they're exploring with Kirk at all, with him kind of, you know, feeling the rigors of being a captain, do you think that the Pike story on Discovery, you know, with him being kept out of the war, and then what we know from his character from the cage and that sort of stuff, do you think that type of storyline is influencing the Kirk storyline in this comic at all?
Could be a little bit, because that storyline gave Pike a ending. Okay, one day I am going to end up surviving a bad situation and not being stuck in a chair. And I think Kirk may be looking at that just a little bit in his own ways. He doesn't know his future, but he is worried what the future holds for him.
Yeah,
and we do know he's eventually going to give up the Enterprise. We don't know when.
Yeah.
But he does give up the Enterprise, get promoted, and then come back and take over the Enterprise back over.
Well, and Jim was mentioning how his character kind of goes through that transition in the movies too, but it's interesting because in the movies, I almost feel like it reads more like I'm getting old and this is why things are different. Whereas in this book, it's not that I'm getting old and things are different. It's that, man, I've been out here and I've been doing this for a long time. And man, there's some crazy stuff going down. And remember, guys, this entire series is a flashback, right? Like, don't forget that. Like, we're going to get to the end of it and be like, what? Oh, yeah, that's right. On page one, this entire thing was a flashback. So I think that's very interesting. The parallels between the Pike story and the Kirk story.
But definitely looking at it, I do like the colorful look of it. I did really enjoy the Pet Rock joke. I saw a recent article on some past retro items, and Pet Rock was mentioned in them. And then we got the scene with the artifact. And that, to me, it got a little predictable in knowing that, okay, something's going on with the artifacts, something's going to happen. So it's a little bit predictable knowing that what we've seen in Trek lore, they get an item and it affects people. Just like we had what happened with Sarek. And I think there's a couple other episodes that same storylines come across. I did like the fact of the Battle of the Red Shirts.
Yeah.
Oh, man, there's a fight with red shirts. We know about those stories, it's like, oh, the red shirts are going at it again.
Those two pages are so red.
Yeah. And looking at it, and that one guy on the ground, his hair is just so red.
Uh-huh.
A red man with a red shirt. It's like, what a great combination. And then I do like the fact that Uhura's the teaser on the end to her communication with the Tholian. And I did take a quick look to make sure that I've got book 6 on order. And We got a nice, I can't wait to see what six is, because we know what the ending in this, who is a bit of the center point of the next issue. Because we see a nice picture of Uhura on the front cover with a little bit of the Enterprise in the background above her. So I can't wait to see the issue. It's a little predictable, but it's not keeping me from saying I still want to know what happens, especially in the B story. So another great, good issue.
So in the Tholian One episode, Commander Laskeen is able to communicate with the Enterprise. He talks to them, and they're able to talk back. But between that episode and this episode, they forgot, I guess?
Well, they actually address it in this book, I think. They talk about how the previous communication was actually facilitated by the Tholians. So the difference is that in this case, it's not like the Enterprise has the technology. It wasn't facilitated by the Universal Translator. It was actually the Tholians who were doing all the translating when they actually communicated before. And so that's why they're not able to do it now. But I totally agree with you, Jim, where you say, or I remember it was TJ who was saying at the end that, you know, all of the sudden we can understand what the Tholian child is saying. And so I think that the reason that everybody's going crazy and space madness is ensuing is absolutely tied into the communications and the fact that now all of a sudden we can understand what's going on with this Tholian. Previously, we have not been able to.
Well, it's got to have something to do with the artifact.
Obviously. It does. And yeah. And I mean, well, so something to me on this, in this book is, so they're at some other random planet, right? What do they call it? Hesperides One, en route to Earth to collect archaeological samples. So this is not necessarily a planet that's tied to the thing at all, right? As far as we know.
As far as we know, right.
Vibe that you guys got. Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because the very shot where they kind of describe the planet they're on is, it looks like a very lush kind of civilization. You know, there's lots of statues and architecture, and maybe it, like some technology with some like floating architecture, or, you know, moons are kind of bringing apart. So I wonder if whatever this artifact is, it seems like it's super high technology, and we still don't know what destroyed the Tholian base that they found the kid on, right? We don't actually know what destroyed that. And now we've discovered a second civilization that's been destroyed by things. And now we have people on the Enterprise getting space madness and wanting to destroy one another. So it does seem like we're starting to focus, at least in this book, upon what maybe the cause of all the previous issues might be. And it might just be tied to this artifact.
I guess we'll have to wait to issue number 6 to find out.
Yep.
So, TJ, bring us in to Discovery Aftermath. Issue number 1, oh my God.
I'm thinking you're going to like this one, Jim. Yes, Aftermath number 1 is our new book this month. We just wrapped up Q Conflict last month, and they hit us with another series for our next Comic Corner already. I love it. It's great. Aftermath number 1 is dealing with, you might have guessed it, the aftermath of Star Trek Discovery Season 2, leading up to Season 3. It's sort of filling in the holes. It's a story takes place between the disappearance of the USS Discovery and the return of Spock to active duty on the USS Enterprise at the end of Season 2. So I guess we've seen stuff like further in the future already, but it fills in some of those blanks. Written by Kirsten Bayer and Mike Johnson, obviously veterans of IDW's Star Trek books and very closely tied to Discovery as well, with art by Tony Chastain, who seems to do a lot of these sort of canon-adjacent comics. You know, he's definitely one of IDW's go-to guys, and we haven't seen a book by him in a while. I think maybe since one of the last Star Trek Discovery book. I think He might have done like one of the annuals as well, but it's been a while. You know, he hasn't been on year five or in Q conflict or any of the Mirror Universe stuff. So good to see him back. Always enjoy his art. And we open with a shot on Kronos and learn that there's trouble in paradise with the House of Kol, and it introduces one of the most famous Klingons of all time, Kor, to the Discovery timeline. Kor and his father believe the Empire, Laurel, as mother and sort of empress, is leading the Empire down a bad path in her willingness to talk to the Federation. I don't think that's such a great idea. In the Imperial Chambers, Laurel speaks with Captain Pike and jokes that their alliance may lead to the Klingons serving on Federation ships, which is obviously a fun little nod to Worf and his tenure on the Enterprise of the Next Generation, I thought, anyways, that's where my head went. But in the end, they still, you know, they reaffirm their sort of uneasy truce. You know, Laurel, they has had quite a bit of experience with the Federation, obviously, but now she's his mother, so she's got to think of her people first. We get a great shot of the Enterprise flying through space, passing by a couple of planets and some sort of... they're not word balloons, but editorial pieces from Captain Pike's point of view of, you know, he's basically desperate to make peace with the Klingons. He'll do just about anything to maintain some semblance of peace. And he reflects on his time in Discovery, the loss of friends, and, you know, his need to make the right choices. We get a flashback quickly with to Vulcan, that shows Spock and Burnham having a moment where Spock is bullied for speaking human in front of some Vulcans, and Michael Burnham sort of steps in, does the pinch, the nerd pinch, and dispatches the bullies quickly, and reassures Spock of, you know, don't be ashamed of your heritage, of your half-human side, and, you know, just be who you are, man. You'll be a lot better off for it, basically. And then we go to now with adult Spock. He reflects on his time with Michael after she left. And Amanda reminds him of their time together, leaving him Lewis Carroll's Through the Looking Glass after Adventures in Wonderland. Obviously, Michael Burnham took that with her and played such a huge part in Star Trek Discovery Season 2. Back on Kronos, Laurel speaks to the Klingon houses and reassures them that their conversation with the Federation is setting up the Klingons' chance to strike. You know, she understands their objections, but it says the Federation's openness will be to the Klingons' advantage. And that sort of seems to reaffirm some belief in her. As the Klingon houses shout out Laurel and Mother in chorus. Captain Pike pays a visit to Amanda and Spock on Vulcan, attempting to get Spock to come back to the Enterprise, even though he does not feel ready. Spock relents and joins him. There's a cute scene in there as well, talking about Spock shaving the beard. But he assures... Jesus, I can't remember her name. He assures
number one.
Reassures her, thank you. Yes, of course. He reassures number one that personal grooming has only ever been the least of his concerns, which I found kind of interesting. It's a little bit of play there. And finally, back on Kronos, we see Kor sparring with a Klingon partner, dispatching him quickly. Laurel finds him and tells him she knows there's dissent. And in his house, even if he might not be sort of the one facilitating it. And as such, she wants him to, as her guard, for when she goes and talks to the Federation in person. And then we get this very, we close with a very ominous shot of Kor's reflection in his batleth, obviously he's waiting for the opportune moment to strike, because, you know, he's been counseled on to sort of not trust Laurel in her path forward for Klingons. So yeah, didn't necessarily tie up anything, but got us caught up with some of the stuff going on after Discovery Season 2. We know now, obviously, Spock is back on the Enterprise, and he spent some time on Vulcan reflecting on his past. Laurel has some ideas for the propagation of the Klingon Empire. And the art is very serviceable. You know, everybody is very clear. You know who everybody is. Even if it's not the most dynamic, I find Tony Chastain's stuff can be kind of stiff at times. But, you know, like maybe he's drawing immediately from reference or something. It's not necessarily bad, but, it doesn't wow you either. I generally find the stuff that sort of fills in the holes, cool. It's not my favorite stuff, from Star Trek. I like the more original things a little better, I think. But it is interesting to get some more info on what's happening in the Discovery sort of place and time. So I enjoyed it. I'm glad to have picked it up, and I'm looking forward to the next one for sure. Looks like Laurel will be heading off to her talks and continuing to rule with an iron fist, as it were. So an enjoyable book. Definitely recommend it. What'd you guys think?
Wow. Okay. Can I just say, wow. I had a fan on our Facebook page ask me after reading this if this is considered canon because the story was that good. And one of the things I want to compare, I want to say, Discovery versus Star Trek Year 5 is that, to me, the Star Trek Discovery stories just read so much richer and so much fuller, and they seem to have, they almost feel like they could be episodes of the TV show. They're written that well, and the characters are that good that you could easily see this as an episode, as a continuation of what we've seen on Discovery. They do such a great job filling in the holes and the little subtle things, like when we talked about the light of Kaelas, they're just so well done. Christian Beyer and Mike Johnson are just outstanding. And I just love this book. It's definitely one of my favorites. And of course, I'm a Klingon. But one of my favorite things about this book was how they're introducing, what are we going to call them? Skinhead Klingons? I don't know what else you want to call them. Where Kor originally didn't have a ridge. When we first see him on TOS, he doesn't have a ridge. When we see him later on TNG, he does. So this story... And Eric and I were talking a little bit before the show. I think, I'd have to go back and look, but I think the way they have his hair, I think he might have some like heavy brow action going on there maybe or something. But this story obviously takes place after Enterprise. And we know from the Enterprise that the Klingons got infected with this virus that melted their ridge away. So maybe he's being afflicted by that. Now, they don't really go into it, but maybe, I'm not sure, but the fact that we see a skinhead Klingons, TNG Klingons, and Discovery Klingons all together in one issue was outstanding. Kor kicked butt. Laurel, awesome. Spock and Burnham having their moment. I was like, oh my God, this reminded me of Star Trek 2009 when Spock gets beat up by the bullies. It was just outstanding, well done, well written, well drawn. Loved every single minute of it. I can't say enough. I'm so excited. I can't wait for issue number 2 to come out. And wow, I'm going to leave it at wow. And Jamie, how about you? Did you get a chance to read this one?
Yes, I did. I thought that they did a really great job on the cover of this. Everybody always has really great artwork on their covers, especially when J.K. Woodward gets his hands on it. But anyhow, having said that, the art was great, the story was great. I really didn't see any issues with the writing in which the characters were portrayed, I thought that all the panels and scenes there with Spock being bullied and Michael Burnham coming in to say, look, hey, you know, that's my brother, don't bully him, scenes were great. I did like the Batlip scene, which it brings you back to TOS, in which you see the all-famous original 1970 Batlip, and which you do see some of the newer weapons in which are featured in the brand-new season of Discovery. And I really do hope that they continue to develop the relationship between Michael Burnham and Spock in the new season of Discovery, but we'll just have to wait and see. And who knows, maybe they'll do a comic book on it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. How about you, Eric? What's your take on it?
Overall, I tend more towards the Jim side of things. This is a pretty good book. So to me, this united the Byer Johnson writing team. Tolly Chastain was the last, I believe was the artist that we saw in Light of Kaelas, which was the book that launched 1,000 books, Discovery a couple years ago, I think, at this point. So it was fun to see them kind of reunite as a team. And you know what? I think you're right, Jim. We were chatting earlier. I think we're seeing a core here who might be either in transition or something. I mean, here's what I think. First of all, who's the old Klingon at the very beginning that does the talk? It seems like maybe he's an uncle. He might be Cole Shaw's brother. Would you guys kind of agree with that?
That's possible, yeah.
Because he says that Cole Shaw died, which of course he did, and then he was thrust into this role then when he has to take over the house. And so here we have two Klingons that are related. One has very clear forehead ridges, that are pretty pronounced, and one has almost nothing. Core just has kind of the long hair like we see in the TOS Klingons. Just seeing difference there among family members, possibly related to the stuff. So good stuff there. In terms of the Laurel story, I feel like there are a couple of Laurels that we see here. We see the Laurel that has the talk with Pike, where she's kind of playing hardball. She's like, I want to be at peace with you. I want to make this treaty, but man, I sure want to remain Klingon. And it's really important to me that I present that to my people. And then the other Laurel that we see is the Laurel that shows up in front of her people, who in some ways I think is kind of the uber politician. She's telling them exactly what they want to hear. She's like, yeah, I know you don't want to do this, but I think we're going to do it anyway, and it's going to be great, and I promise you that I'll keep a sharp blade and pay attention to what's going on with these humans. And then they all sort of cheer her for that. So the only problem that I had with this book was I was a little bit wondering how inspirational – I mean, she just must be amazingly inspirational to kind of get all of these Klingons to play along with the – even like considering a treaty with the Federation.
Well, let's not forget, Eric, that the way Section 31 and Emperor Georgiou set it up is that Ash murdered her child as a Federation traitor. And
right.
Coleshaw saved her and by assassinating him. So they got that whole subplot set up about Coleshaw being the hero when actually he was the villain. So all the Klingons think, that Ash was the one that did it and that Coleshaw died preventing it, which we know is not true. So
no, but
that's
a good point. Yeah, that's a really good point. And that absolutely, I think, is playing into what we're seeing in this issue for sure. So. Yeah, good point. With regards to the story that was kind of like the 2009 Kelvin universe flashback to childhood Spock, I thought, it was a nice scene that it was him and Michael Burnham, and that, Burnham was the one who pulled out the Vulcan neck pinch and used it as a child. I thought that was pretty cool. But those 3 pages or 4 pages or whatever, it was kind of like, I don't know, I didn't feel like they – lent that much more to the story. It felt like a little bit of filler. I think the best part of that part of the story was how it led into the adult Spock story. Maybe that's what it was. It was just meant to be a kind of 3-page intro to Amanda and adult Spock talking to one another, which I thought was a very nice scene. Yeah, lots of good stuff in here. I love the number one, like you were saying, TJ, the number one comment about the beard was hilarious. And then at the very end, we have, you know, Kor pledging his blade to the Chancellor, whereas earlier in this issue, Kor had said basically the opposite, like, I'm going to get her, leave her to me. You know, don't you worry about the dishonor on our house. I'm going to take care of her. So we absolutely know some sort of shenanigans is being set up here. And I'm mostly interested in how they're going to tie that into TOS Kor. I mean, we know he doesn't die. We know he survives. We know he shows up later. Maybe he's, you know, demoted, or his trajectory as a military officer has changed or affected maybe as a result of something we see in these books. I'll be interested to see. Overall, great book. I really enjoyed it. Thought the art was good. Love the colors. Love the story. Just overall, really solid.
How about you, Charles? Wrap this bad boy up.
Well, Eric talks about how he's not as interested of Spock's flashback into his past. But that's exactly what Discovery did. Discovery would go back and look at the relationship between young Spock and young Michael Burnham. So I like that parallel, that they're keeping that same style going that they did in Discovery, that we're learning more about that relationship between those two. Because I, for one, always am interested in, go ahead and give me a little bit of backstory. Give me some back history. And you kind of get that philosophical look into Spock trying to figure out what he's going to do. He misses his sister, and he's not sure what to do. As that post that Jim mentioned about the was it canon, I'm not sure if my friend replied, but I thought it interesting explaining, like, well, it's canon adjacent, but this issue actually occurs between the Discovery disappearing and Spock coming on the bridge. So that's a little like a few month gap in there that we're filling in that entire situation, which makes it a rather interesting effect to it. I know two of the co-hosts are definitely strong on the Klingon side. I was seriously enjoying the Spock with young strong young Michael in his decision, trying to make his decisions, and then his interactions with his mother, with Pike, with Number One. I'm liking a lot of that interactions. We're getting a lot of stories there between them, because we never really got a good, we only got a little bit of a story in there with Discovery. And as people are big fans of Pike and Enterprise, I'd like more Enterprise story, because I'm liking the new captain. I'm liking the crew on that side, and I want stories on both sides. And who knows if Spock is ever going to see his sister again, but it's going to be interesting to tie in stories before we've got that takeoff where they're separated by many centuries. Or not century, almost a century.
Well, you know what I think would be really cool to see, speaking of Spock and his family, I would like to see once and for all the Cybok thing addressed and laid to rest.
Preach.
And I think, yeah, I think a comic book.
Totally agree. Totally agree.
I think
they need to address it.
A comic book is the perfect place to do it.
Well, it's true, Jim, but they gotta do it in official canon, which is only on screen. Like, if you go to the hardcore people, it's only officially canon if it's presented on screen. And so although I agree with you, a comic book would be amazing, I think they have to deal with it on screen to, like, make it official. I mean, Star Trek V was on screen.
Maybe,
it's official. So where'd he come from?
Maybe if IDW sparks the idea.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe CBS might actually go do something with it.
That would be such a cool, even if they did a short trek, even if they just touched on it, you know, and were like, oh, by the way, here's Cybok, you know, I mean, that would be so cool just to have canon reference. That's all it would take. That's right.
I think it needs to be brought up to IDW. See what they say. I brought the idea up with season 8 of DS9. I think they got a lot of good stuff going out there. They just need to get the stuff going.
Mm-hmm.
And I know J.K. loves to try getting into IDW and getting some good Star Trek stories in. Well, maybe if he's got an idea, if we can feed this idea to him, maybe it might be another future story of him and he can do the artwork to it.
Well, I thought it was great when J.K. wrote the story about what happened to Mr. Spock after he took over the Terran Empire in Mirror Mirror. I thought that story arc was more interesting than the actual comic itself. You guys remember the story I'm talking about?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I love that story.
Yeah, I mean, that was a cool... I mean, that's one of those things that we need. It's one. It's a fill. Who said that they weren't big on fill-in stories? I can't. One of us said we weren't big on fill-in stories, but that's a fill-in story that's very interesting.
Well, it answered a question that everybody has, and I think Cybok is that question. Let's answer
it. Question. Yeah.
You know, get it down and answer it. But overall, I thought this book was great. I thought Pike was awesome. As usual, he always is. And number one, the whole thing was good.
Well, and
I'm really looking forward to it.
Charles, were you the one that commented on the cover? The cover of this one is our Star Trek Discovery veteran, Angel Hernandez, whose art we all – I don't think we've complained about a single thing he's done at all. And he did the cover for this book, and, man, it is stunning.
Hey, TJ, do you have any more of issue one of Aftermath at the shop?
I don't believe we have any more Aftermath. No, I think we've got some year fives, but
I might have to get a couple more so we can give them away to our faithful listeners, like we're doing with year five issue one.
Yeah,
do
we should chat. We might have a couple here at Cosmic Monkey in Portland.
You think that's a good idea, guys? We should give away an issue number one to some of our lucky fans.
We should, because
yeah.
This is a new and awesome series.
Yeah, let's do it. We'll see what we can come up with, and we'll announce it on the next show. And all you guys got to do is listen, dial, and win. 646-668-2433. And once we can track down some Discovery Aftermath issue number ones somewhere, all you need to do is call, and we drop it in the mail and send it to you. It's that easy. But first, you got to tune in. So tune in and dial and win. Very simple. So overall, I think we had some good issues this month. I was more impressed with the Discovery book than I was with the Star Trek Year 5 stuff. But I'm a Klingon, and I love Laurel. She's my favorite character. And one thing we were talking about briefly, which I think we should maybe touch on, we have about 14 minutes left here, is that we know that Laurel is the Empress. She's mother of the Klingon Empire right now, which is about 10 years before Kirk shows up. And we know that Gorkon is the Chancellor in Star Trek VI when the Klingon Empire is folding because of what happens to Praxis. So between the two, between Laurel and Gorkon, Is there another emperor in there? Or does Gorkon take over from Laurel? And I was saying to Charles and Eric before the show that Laurel's opinion of the Federation seems very, very parallel to what Gorkon thought and wanted, which is why they killed him. So what do you guys think? Do you think that in the Star Trek universe, Gorkon takes over for Laurel? Or do you think there's another chancellor in between there? What do you guys think?
I think it's very possible that there is a direct lineage because, let me see, Star Trek VI takes place, gosh, I should have looked this up, but X number of years past where we are, so 10 plus probably, what, another 15, maybe 25 years total? I'm spitballing here. Charles can maybe figure this out while I'm chatting. But it's very possible that one's handed right off into the other because we know that Laurel's, or at least we assume she's pretty young, right? She doesn't appear to be an aged Klingon. And so assuming that she's able to survive any coup attempts or that sort of stuff in the upcoming seasons, it's very possible she could live to be a very old chancellor. And we know that by the time Star Trek VI rolls around, Gorkon is kind of a fat old man, right? He's been around the block a little while. I don't know how long he's been chancellor. Maybe they mentioned that in the movie, but maybe not. So 25, you know, say it's 20, 25 years. That's not that much time. There could be a direct connection there.
And something else that I want to mention, which I mentioned to other fans that have complained about Laurel in the past, is TNG, Lursa and Bator make it clear. They say that women can't serve on the council. They said that flat out, which is where they came up with their illegitimate Terrell story. However, in Star Trek VI, after Gorkon's assassinated, his daughter, Aza Bor, is appointed as the chancellor. So if Laurel was chancellor before Gorkon, that would only make perfect sense that the Klingon Empire would have no problem putting another woman in charge because they just had one. It just makes sense to me. Do you guys agree?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And so here we go. So Undiscovered Country is 2293. Okay. So 2293, and we're at 2257 right now. So let's see. What's that math? It's like 35 years. So absolutely. I mean, that would be if Laurel was precedent for Gorkon's kin, that would be pretty cool, right? It's kind of retconning a setup for that condition.
I like it. I like it. I don't know if it's true or not, but I like it. I mean, it makes sense to me. What do you think, Jamie? Do you like that idea?
Yeah, I think that'd be a really great idea.
Yeah, I like it. What do you think, TJ? Yes, no, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly possible. Obviously, it seems to me that being head of the Klingon Empire is a dangerous job. So, you know, there could be 50 emperors, for all we know, between now and Gorkon. But I guess, you know, we'll see what happens in the end of Aftermath. I don't know that we'll see any changing of hands inside the comics. That seems worthy of a season of television, obviously, but I think anything's possible. I think it could very well. Laurel has a pretty tight grip, despite some dissension on her position. You know, mother, I'm sure, is a title not given lightly, but it's also a very dangerous job, and there's always people gunning for it or thinking you're doing it the wrong way. So it's possible that she loses it, you know, sooner than we may hope.
Well, don't forget, we also have Section 31 making sure she remains in power, too, as we saw.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the show that's going to develop her story a little further, assuming that Discovery sticks to the future and just kind of follows the ship. If we get more Laurel, there's a good chance that we'll get it in Section 31. And, you know, I think you're right, TJ. I think there could be, you know, 35 chancellors between here and there. It's 36 years of time, though, so you have to wonder, you know, the political thinking at this point for a possible reconciliation with the Federation seems to have its genesis with Laurel. And I feel like in the past, we've always had this idea that it came from other places, but Discovery has shown us that the idea of cooperating with the Federation actually goes all the way back to pre-TOS era, despite Kirk's, you know, malevolence toward Klingons in general. So I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, just how about you, Charles? You've been awful silent through this whole Klingon conversation.
I think it's going to be a main storyline with Section 31, because we know they're going in the future. We've still got Ash around heading it, and I think there's still going to be a tie-in with the Klingons from there. So I think it's going. I think we're going to get maybe some details once Section 31 gets released. And I say I'm going to see what happens from there, what direction they go, and they might give us some answers.
And, you know, speaking of Ash, I really love the fact that he's a Klingon grafted onto human bones. And I just think that the character of Ash needs to be worked on a little bit, because
yes,
he's not. Ugh. He's not. He's,
season two was awful.
He's like, what's the word I'm looking for? Douchebag, maybe. I guess.
Well, he just he was the worst character in all of season two. I mean, he was written terribly. He didn't have like a reason to be there, and it was like he was all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason he had to be there was to get Laurel to bring the Klingon fleet at the end. I mean, they need to work on that character.
I wonder if they're purposely kind of making him an edgy character, and then we'll see what direction he goes with Section 31. But I wonder if they're purposely making him a very edgy character and a very confused character right now. Because I think he is still confused. I don't think he still understands what's going on.
The thing was, like, in season one, Ash was this amazing character because he was barrier breaking, in that he was a male character that had been through this major psychological trauma. And we remember we talked all about the PTSD storyline and how central to his character that was. I mean, that season one Ash was amazing and was very interesting to watch. Season two Ash seemed to kind of be like, well, he's in Section 31 and he's kind of like jumping in every once in a while to kind of be a pain in the butt to people, and he just didn't have his own story arc in season two. So presumably if they give us a Section 31 show with him featured in it, hopefully they actually give a little bit more time to his character post Michael Burnham, and don't just make him this kind of, like you were saying, Jim, you know, this is kind of jerk who's there just poking everybody in the ribs all the time.
Yeah, they need to work on him, but I'm willing to hang out and see what they do with him. And I'm looking forward to Section 31, and who knows, maybe IDW will give us a Section 31 comic book. So before we run out of time, though, TJ, what do we have coming up for our next comic corner?
So for our next comic corner, we will have Star Trek Year 5, number 6, which will be out next Wednesday on September 18th. And we will have Star Trek Discovery Aftermath, number 2 of 3, which comes out the week after that on September 25th.
And there's one more that we are going to be having, though, right? You were telling me at the store?
October.
October?
Yeah, we'll be getting
Voyager.
Picard.
Voyager.
We'll have in October, or for the November edition, we'll have Star Trek Year 5, number 7, Star Trek Voyager, Mirrors and Smoke, and I imagine Aftermath somewhere. I don't see it, but and then in November, we'll have Star Trek Picard, or rather in December, we'll have Star Trek Picard. So,
yeah.
A ways yet.
Yeah.
Perfect timing for the end of Aftermath. We'll get another new issue, new series.
So we should be having three issues per show from for a little while anyways.
Just two for October. Aftermath and year five.
Yeah, that's all right. That's okay. So, believe it or not, guys, we're at the end of another show. So, hard to believe, but it's true. So, we're going to be back again with you guys the first Monday of next month, which is what? Where's my calendar? What's the date going to be? Have any
problems?
That's going to
be the 7th. 7th next month.
Yeah, it would be the... No, it would be the 14th, right? No, 7th, yeah.
Nope, 7th is the first one, yeah.
7th's
the first. Yep. Does that work for everybody?
Yeah. Does that work with the book schedule?
Does that work with yeah? Does that work with the release?
Yes. Let me take a quick look. Yeah. The book the first book in October is on the 16th, so we'll have two books for the 7th.
Yeah, that'll work.
All right. So there you have it. We'll do the next Comic Corner. We'll be on the 7th. Excellent. So, I want to say thank you to Jamie and TJ and Eric and Charles for hanging out with us. And thank you to David for calling. It's always great when we hear from our fans. And, of course, I want to say congratulations to Nathan, because Nathan was our lucky caller and won an autographed J.K. Woodard comic book for his birthday. So, congratulations to Nathan. And hopefully one of our winners that we picked, that I read off their names at the beginning of the show, one of you guys will give us a call, maybe Thursday. And you can win your copy of Star Trek Year 5, issue number 1. We got it waiting for you, but you got to call. You got to call 646-668-2433, and we'll drop that in the mail to you. It's that simple. So you guys want to listen, because you never know what we're going to give away. But you can't win it if you're not in it. So anyways, that's the end of the show, guys. Anybody want to have anything to say in closing before we wrap everything up? TJ, anything you want to add?
Sure. Thank you for hosting this and putting it together. Love talking comics with you guys. Some really great books. If you want to, I can hook you up with some comics. If you're interested, you can check out Freakopolis.com or Facebook.com/Freakopolis. Send me a message. I'd be happy to hook any of our listeners up, get in what you're looking for. Or you can come and see me in Whitehall, New York, at the Freakopolis Geekery Wednesday through Sunday. We got Star Trek Attack Wing coming up soon on October 13th. That returns to our Sunday afternoons with myself and Uncle Jim. So, yeah, if you're in the area, highly encourage you to check that out as well.
And there is a link. If you go to our Trek Talking page, there is a link on the right-hand side that will bring you right to Freakopolis, and you can talk to TJ right then and there. So check that out if you're interested. Eric, what's going on around in Portland? Anything exciting?
Yeah, this weekend, or excuse me, not this, well, I guess it is this weekend, the 15th already, coming up on Sunday, we're having our Star Trek Attack Wing event from 1 to 5 at Guardian Games here in Portland. That's at 345 Southeast Taylor, and I'm super excited about this event because we are doing the Go Big or Go Home event. Bring a 200-point fleet, and as we all have been chatting about, as we all know, all the Borg stuff and animated stuff has been recently released, and I am planning on putting a lot of Borg on the table myself. So 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday the 15th, Guardian Games, come join us. It'll be a good time. 200-point fleet.
And how about you, Charles? Anything going on out in Vegas?
Well, due to a NASCAR race, I won't make it, but Friday night is the finale of the Fallout Waste and Warfare campaign. And they're going to have fun with this one because I think it's going to be 150, 200 points on one character. And it's going to be an all-out battle with, if you're killed off the table, reforming somewhere else on the table. So it's going to be a fun battle. I'm going to be sad to miss it, but it's one of the weekends I can't make it.
And how about you, Jamie? You got anything going on that you want to mention?
No, not really, but I'm going to say it again. I really wish that they were giving us the hard show sooner than they are, but oh well, we'll just have to wait.
I think we're going to see the short treks beforehand. I know Brett and myself and Admiral Ken Jason and Tina. We're all going down to see Star Trek The Motion Picture on Sunday at Crossgates Mall in Albany at 1 o'clock. So if anyone's in the area, look us up. We're going to be there. And Thursday on Trek Talk, and we're going to be talking about Happy Star Trek Day. What does Star Trek mean to you? And we're going to spend a whole show. Leslie Sawyer, my meat and potatoes, is going to be on. We're going to be talking about Dragon Con and what Star Trek means to you. So you want to tune in Thursday night. Same bat time, same bat channel. Phone number 646-668-2433. Thanks for listening, everybody. It's been great. It's been fun. We'll see you on the 7th for the next Comic Corner. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Stunt Treks with V. Leslie Hoffman, yours truly, Uncle Jim. Tom Morga is going to be on. We're going to be talking about Star Trek, the motion picture, 40th anniversary. Tom Morga was in the movie. He doubled Mr. Spock. He was a Klingon. They used his head to mold all the Klingons. We're going to be talking a lot about Star Trek, the motion picture, tomorrow. So check that out, Stunt Trek, 7 o'clock. And that's it. We're out of time. Have a good night, everybody. Be good to each other. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you. I'll see you guys all tomorrow. Wednesday's a day off, then we'll all be back together on Thursday night for Trek Talk. And have a good night, everybody. Talk to you later.
Bye. Good night, guys. Live long and prosper.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.